Without any further ado, Troy, come on up here and talk to us. My name's Troy Nixon, I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I say I'm a recovered alcoholic because that's what the first guy that took me through the steps said, open your book and find that first little line there on that page where it says the story of how many thousands of men and women were recovered from alcoholism. Underline that word, recovered. It's the first promise in the book. Something to shoot for. You know, not shoot for recovering. And I know that tickles a few asses sometimes. But, it's my experience. You know, I wanted to get somewhere. See, the deal is, I used to introduce myself as an alcoholic for a little while, and I would take, you know, when I started saying recovered alcoholic, I'd take a lot of shots. But I had guys that taught me that it was okay to take shots for what you believe in. It was okay to stand up for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous for the 12 steps that saves your ass. It's okay to stand up for that. You know, there's something in there about all men of faith have courage. Women of faith have courage. You know, come straight out of the book. The reason I say my last name is because of something I found reading Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. And Dr. Bob said that you're breaking the tradition on anonymity just as much by using only your given name in a meeting as you are by going out and blabbing your name in the press. And that was useful information. You know, I brought that up at my home group before, which is the Northland group, and I've been going there since before I was sober, well before I was sober. I used to go there drunk all the time. Drink tequila, fall off the chair. I mean, I'm a real alcoholic. I've been sober since January 27th of 1999. What I like to say about living a sober life is living in the bonus round, right? Because I was looking in an old big book today, the first one I had at treatment. It was the second big book I had in my life. The first one I got when I was married to my wife and still drinking back in the 90s, and I came home to find a big book laying on the bed. And you know what? I looked at that thing. She wasn't in the room at the time, but it was on my side of the bed. And I looked at it and went, you know, I'll know where it is, under the bed. Because I wasn't, you know, what does it say? Most of us have been unwilling to admit we're real alcoholics. You know, and I'm going to chase that obsession that I can drink like a normal man until I damn near die. So, to me, you know, bonus round is pretty appropriate. You know, I was thinking when everybody was getting up and getting Desire chips and getting 1 month chips. 1 month is a long damn time, guys, for a real alcoholic. And Charlie and I were talking about that the other day. I said, you know, it just chaps my ass when I hear people with 30 years, 20 years, whatever. Well, I've been sober a little while now. You know, what does a new guy think about that? If that's a little while, what's my week? Well, for this alcoholic, a week was an eternity. For 2 days was a long time. It was good. It's like, wow, I had a drink in 2 days, 3 days, 5 days. Man, I get a month? That was giant. Congratulations to all of y'all. And everybody else who got everything beyond that, man. But what I was thinking is, on page 161 of the big book, it says, no one has sunk too low or become too discredited to be welcomed cordially. If he means business. That's the little kicker there. We love you, but I can't do more to help a guy than he's willing to do for himself. Right? Nobody in here has the power to keep that cat sober. Otherwise, shit, we'd all be good. I got a little book. See, I was introduced to Mark H. back in 1997, fresh out of treatment. And I went to treatment, and I got out and I drank that night. And then I went and met this guy, and he was massively intimidating, and he had Jaime L. and Ivan and Dave B. and a bunch of cats that were real solid, and they were in the work, and they were like these little, man, they were just going. And I just squirmed in my seat when I listened to them talk about the steps and talk about the promises and talk about all that stuff, because I didn't have any experience with it, man. You know, you're sitting there and somebody's telling you about this cool trip they went on, And you're just sort of like, well, it sounds cool, but you haven't had that experience. And Mark was real big on that stuff. He used to talk about a guy that was telling him about the afterlife and how, you know, the guy's telling him all about, this priest is telling him about the afterlife. And he said, well, do you have experience with that? And the priest says, well, no. He said, well, I'm not interested in what you have to say. And that's sort of how it goes for alcoholics and addicts. You know, it says in our literature, the message that can hold these people's attention must have depth and weight. And depth and weight is what we get in here. Big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Instructions. I would rather have a book than meetings. And the reason I say that is because we can run around to a lot of places. This is not one of them. You know, I'm speaking to a different group over here. But we've all been to those meetings where it's like, man, I really needed a meeting today because my ass was falling off, or I was, you know, I'm on fire. Never mind, maybe, you know, you ask him, did you pray this morning? Well, no. Did you ask God to keep you sober this morning? Well, no. But I got to a meeting. But then they're sitting in there 2 or 3 years later, they still haven't worked the steps. And there's a beautiful story in this book, the original, the reprint of the first edition, called Lone Endeavor. And it was about a little guy whose mom read about Alcoholics Anonymous in one of the very early articles about Alcoholics Anonymous. The book wasn't even out yet. She wrote to New York, and her poor little darling boy is in the sanitarium, getting ready to die alcoholic death. And she says, could you guys please help? And they lithographed, I guess they did, or whatever, yeah, multi-lith is what they called it. And they sent these papers off to this guy. And he didn't have meetings. He didn't have primary purpose group. He didn't have any other meeting. He didn't have a sponsor. He didn't even have another alcoholic there. What he had was instructions. And he did the work, and he wrote back. You know, he stayed sober. And then the guys at the sanitarium said, you know, he started looking around for people to help, is the point. He read the instructions. Everywhere it said to do something, he did it. And then he started, you know, part of the instructions. What? Carry this message. He started looking for the other little guys and started helping them. And you know, the Works Press guys, Bill and Bob and all the rest of them, wrote this guy, you know, and asked if they could use his story. You know, he writes back, please, please do. You know, it's just a really cool story. And it's just illustrative. And it talks about it in the forewords in a couple of places of the big book. Quite as important was the discovery that the message could be passed by the mail as well as by word of mouth. You know, they were sending it out. That's all they had at that time. You know, that's why it talks about you maybe do your fifth step with a preacher, or do your fifth step with an understanding friend, or do your fifth step with whoever the hell's available at that point, because you're dying, and if you don't do it, you know, you may not get to the bonus round. You know, sometimes you just run out of tokens. What I like to say is, you know, keep rolling those dice, because we've all seen it. I've watched a number of people die, including some really close to me, in the time I've been sober. I was looking in my very first big book. That's what I was getting to on that, sorry. I just, you know, I'm like Michelle. It's going to come as it comes, and that's just, you know, sorry. That's it. In that first big book, there was a guy, he was the son of really wealthy psychiatrist in San Francisco. He's a hippie kid, he's a little heroin addict, and he was in treatment with me. And he hooked up with another little heroin addict there, a little girl. And they were running together, and people were giving him a hard time, but they understood each other, supposedly. They were nice kids. They were coming back to Austin. And this guy wrote in the cover page of that first old tattered big book I've got, said, Troy, you know, you're really fun to hang out with here at the blah, blah place. And look forward to seeing you back in Austin. The good times are ahead. And that was December 12th or so of 1997. And he was dead 2 weeks later. 2 weeks later. Good times are ahead. He's half right. My time's been good. My time's been damn good. And so I ask myself on a regular basis, do I still mean business today? 11 years and a couple months out. Most of the time I can say, you bet your ass I do. Because I was dying an alcoholic death. I had run everybody off. That's how I ended up in Austin, Texas. I'm originally from Houston. And I basically burned all my bridges down there. It wasn't... Nobody wanted to see me coming around. Nobody. Nobody that knew me, you know. And I couldn't really go get to know anybody new because I didn't have a whole lot to offer at that point. So I came to Austin where my mom and stepdad lived, and about three days of looking at me up close and personal, my mom asked, well, son, how would you like to go to treatment? So off I went. And like I said, that first time I got out and I drank the night I got out. I listened, I was introduced to the big book, I was introduced to the literature, I was introduced to the three-part nature of the disease of alcoholism, body, mind, spirit, the spiritual malady, mental obsession, physical allergy. You know, I'm irritable, restless, and discontented, lest I can once again experience the sense of ease and comfort that comes at once from sucking down a bunch of tequila, smoking a bunch of weed, eating a bunch of pills, snorting a bunch of coke, whatever. But I just didn't really buy it, man. I just didn't buy it. So I walked out and I drank, and about 2 weeks, I got a little job, and about two or so weeks later, you know, right at the end of January 97, I got my fourth DWI. You know, money well spent at the treatment center. And then I was suicidal, and I was crazy, and it was really, 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 really dark, bad, terrible. I was thinking about the unhooking the ankle bracelet thing. That's a pretty good trick. See, I learned how to unhook my interlock on my truck. And for about 4 months, in late 98, leading up to my sobriety day, I'm driving this little beater truck, and I'm drinking a couple liters of tequila a day. I put them in little Gatorade squeeze bottles, and I'm on felony probation, and I'm driving around with the interlock unhooked. Terror, it would be a good adjective for this situation. Lying to everybody I knew, absolutely miserable, dark, cold. And on the 26th, I'd gone and re-upped my stock, and it was lunchtime. I was down off Brody Lane, and I was climbing on a tractor. It was really cold and really funky, and I heard a voice just say, "What the fuck are you doing?" Voice. You know? And I reached in my pocket and I pulled up my phone. I dialed 800-749-6160. Looking for my buddy Chris. Because, see, the skids had been greased for me to go back to this treatment center if I decided I wanted to go. Everybody wanted me to go, but it was like, you know, I'm like Mercury at that point, right? It's like trying to catch the little son of a bitch. Because, you know, we're alcoholics and addicts are slippery little sons of bitches. True?
Yeah.
I mean, we are. We're like, you know, trying to hang on to that, man. Good luck. And they were calling. They were looking for me, and everything was set. But that day, I had a moment of clarity. The briefest little thing, and I called that guy, and I told him when he finally got on the phone, I need to come back. Something bad's getting ready to happen. And that was the bottom. That was my bottom. You know, your bottom is where you turn toward the light. It doesn't matter if you've had any DWIs. It doesn't matter if you've been locked up. It doesn't matter. Divorced, not divorced, married, not. You know, none of that shit matters. And that's what these guys told me when I started listening. Troy, it's not about your external condition. It's about internal condition. Irritability, restlessness, discontented. Feeling apart from. Different than. Don't fit in. Born into the wrong family. That was one of my big ones. Obviously, these guys I'm going to high school with who have Porsches were born into my family. Right? Because I'm driving the old truck and working my ass off and making better grades than any of them. You know, there's a cosmic slight going on here. That's how I thought, man. I was a crazy son of a bitch. And I worked, and I worked, and I worked, and I drank, and I ate pills, and I mean, I started getting in trouble at 18, 17, bad trouble, lots of trouble, legal trouble, guns, drugs, lots of alcohol stuff, PI and DWI. So, but, you know, and I was first told that I maybe had a drinking problem when I was 25, and I was told that by a guy that I was hanging out with. He was a drug dealer, he was the father of my girlfriend. We were always armed, and we always had piles of... I used to have a couple pounds of cocaine in my apartment at any given time in a Halliburton Zero briefcase. But this guy was like ex-Special Forces Nom, and he had arms like Popeye, and he would just, you know, he'd twist my head off if I... But he always gave me, you know, I always had an ounce, 2 ounce something sitting around. I had what I needed, what I wanted. And whiskey and cash and fast cars and crazy shit. And I withdrew from my family, you know. So I just became even more apart from, you know. I was going to school. I didn't fit in there. You know, I wore shorts a lot, played a lot of tennis, rode a bike to school. Didn't fit in with all the folks there. Then I start wearing a suit and tie because I got this little job in the real estate business in Houston. All of a sudden, there were girls that wanted to talk to me. But I was like, if I wasn't good enough for you before, I'm not good enough. You know, I got this big chip on my shoulder at that point. And I'm just getting high and I'm going. But Rachel's dad told me, maybe you need to slow down. You know, and you're 25 and you're bulletproof. And plus, he's partying just as much as I am. I'm looking at him like, what are you talking about? Come on. Old man? What? But anyway, so that was just this other episode. Now I'm going to tell you one other quick little thing about the real alcoholic. When I was married to this woman after I'd left her at the altar once, about a week before we were to be married. Beautiful girl. This is another thing. I thought she was going to straighten me out. Right? She was a beautiful girl, hard worker, had her shit together. She's going to be good for me. Right? It's going to be a good union. See, the thing is, I was terrible for her. I tortured her, stole emotional, physical, monetary security from her. It was terrible for her. And somewhere along the way, her parents and two of her sisters were killed in a car accident when we were married just about 4 years. Guys, almost every time we went out, I would wake up, most nights, I'd wake up in the passenger seat of our little Volvo in Houston, under the carport, past, you know, 3 in the morning, and she's gone, you know, and I'd slither into the house and go up to bed, acting like everything was okay. And, you know, she was already pulling away from me and starting to really despise me. She, you know, that frothy emotional appeal, she was doing it too. It's just anything. She didn't understand the real alcoholic. She's telling me she'll do anything. Will you just please stop drinking? Please. You know? Well, no. So it just went like that. So when her parents and her sisters were killed in that car accident, one night she came home and I was working and she came home. And she wanted me to go to just the grocery store with her. Just go to the grocery store with me, Troy, please. No. I'm on the couch, I'm drunk, stoned, not going. She went, and you know what? There was a normal guy or a guy there who saw her, saw the hurt on her face, and reached out to her. And she ended up leaving me. And my initial reaction was, well, thank God the bitch is gone. Because now I got a no monitor, you know? The hall monitor has left the building. And, you know, the inmates are running the place. And that's, you know, that's sort of how it went. And she was gone, and it's just so much. But so anyway, shortly thereafter, I am hanging out with all these friends, and I'm climbing up in this building. It's probably a little taller than this. I'm high on Valium, because I got this new girlfriend who's a little older, and she's giving me all this Valium. She has no idea about the amount I drink and do on top of that, and they're mixing everything. But she's coming over and hanging out and then giving me Valium and then going home. So I'm out, and I'm loaded. And I climb up in this building. It's like big I-beams up the side of this big warehouse. It's an artist warehouse in Houston. And I'm climbing up. You know, I just get this idea, man. I'm going to go climb up this thing. Like this deal, except it was a T-I-B. And I go up, and I start across the peaked roof, and there's just all this cars and stuff all over in the building and a concrete floor, and I'm over the middle, and the people who are with me are yelling at me, what are you doing? And I'm going. And I get past the peak, and I'm like up there, and my feet came off the thing. And so I'm kicking my feet back up. That's really the last thing I remember is my hands came off. And I fell. And I shattered this wrist. And I dislocated this elbow. And, you know, damn near died. And I woke up in the hospital. I was there for 5 days. I wake up with the ex-wife. You know, I call her from the hospital when I came to. Say, oh, am I still covered by your insurance? It was terrible. And my dad and her just like this. You know, that's what I come to. You know, just glaring. We know the look, right? How many times have you seen that look? And so they're just glaring at me. So I get out of the hospital. Now, here's where the other little real alcoholic twist comes. I get dropped off at home. I got this big, nasty external fixator on my arm. Pins poke through there. I'm wondering if I'm even going to have the use of my hand. You know, will I ever be able to go surfing again? Will I ever be able to do that? You know, I'm really bumming. But I go in the front door. My friend says, Troy, would you like us to come in? This is right near Christmas time. Would you like us to come in with you? No, I'm good. I'm good. No, I'm going to go and lay down. You know, just get out of here. I don't need y'all. So they leave. I go in the front door, grab a backpack, out the back door, through the backyard, and right behind our house there was the Ginger Man in Houston. And I go to the Ginger Man. Because I've been 5 days without alcohol now. Had some morphine for a while, but hell, I was in massive pain. So that's just, you know, that was just assuaging that. So I go to the Ginger Man and get a couple of beers, and then I mean, it was crazy, guys. I couldn't even tie my shoes. But I walk to Richard's Liquors and I get a big giant bottle of Meyer's rum and I go around in the alley, this nice part of town, and just because I'm irritable, restless, and discontented, and unless I can once again immediately experience the sense of ease and comfort that comes at once from sucking on that big bottle of Meyer's dark rum. So almost died, wife's gone, all hell's breaking loose, I'm going to go drink. And that's how it went. So the deal is, I party hard. Everybody's got different experiences with the party stuff. But you got to just understand that three-part nature of the disease. When you put the stuff in your body, can you control every time how much you're going to drink, or use, or smoke, or shoot, or whatever? Every time. Can you control it? And you got to be honest with yourself. Because we can't tell you. You can't tell the guy. Charlie can't tell the guy. Kate can't tell the guy. Marty can't tell the girl if she's a real alcoholic or a real addict or not. You know, it says on our little chips. What? Bingo. You got to tell yourself. You got to say, you got to either chase it like the big book says and continue being unwilling and chase it to the gates of insanity or death, or you got to be honest and say, you know what? Maybe I'm exactly like that crazy son of a bitch up there. Maybe I'm exactly like that woman or that woman. Because otherwise you ain't got a chance at the bonus round. See, the deal is all those cats that keep rolling those dice, they will eventually snake eyes. Which could be prison. Could be wet brain. That would suck. Could be death. But it's not about the external condition. I knew a guy who's a surf buddy of mine. He would not get back into the work. He knew what he needed to do. What time is it? Okay. He knew what he needed to do. This guy was a big, handsome guy, making about 40 grand a month. Oral surgeon, good surfer. Place on Lake Austin. You know, driving this badass LaForza Range Rover thing. Like a Ferrari Range Rover. Berserk. To the outside world, he had it by the short hairs. But you know what? He died by himself, flopped out on the floor shooting cocaine. You know, the really crazy twist of the story is his father was 31 years sober when he died as a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he got to bury his precious son. Dignity and grace. That's all he exhibited the whole time. He knew there was a solution. His son knew there was a solution. His son was unwilling to do what we do. He would tell me all the time, Troy, I need to get back in here. You know, I'd say, come on, man. Come on. Wouldn't do it. And I know some of the guys that I know, a lot of them have heard that story a number of times. You know what? If some good can come out of that guy's death, great. Because the deal is, you will see a lot of death if you stick around this thing. And I've been accused of being cold-hearted when I say, you better get used to it. Now see, the thing is, I don't say you better like it. I say you better get used to it. I don't like it, but I know it's preventable. That makes me like it even less. You know, because I know there's a way out. And a whole ton of the people sitting in this room know there's a way out. For those of you who don't know there's a way out yet, if there was nothing else that I did tonight, it would be to try to convince you to give it a shot. Because what have you got to lose? You know, everybody says, oh man, inventory, so much work. Oh man, it's so much work. Come on, dude. Getting loaded all the time, running from the police and your creditors and your family members and everybody else who's chasing you, that's work. You know, I love my little crackhead friends. He goes, this is work. Right? Are they still out there? I know the son of a bitch was in the house a minute ago. That's work. Right? That sucks. Ooh. You know, getting God in your life. God, the steps just aren't that difficult. I don't care what you've done. I've heard so... When I first got sober, there was a little sign on the back of the door at the Northland Group of Alcoholics Anonymous that said, if you have 1 year sober and are ready to sponsor people, sign up. Well, I had come from this other background where they're telling you, you get your ass out there and start sponsored in a month, 2 months, when you work the steps. Really, because the deal is you haven't worked the steps until you're out there carrying the message. You know, I get a lot of guys come along and they go, oh man, I want to go back through the steps. I'm like, well, where are you? How many guys are you sponsored? No. Well, man, you got to start there. That's where the gravy comes. Ask anybody who sponsors someone, man. That's where the joy comes. That's where the magic happens. To see somebody attain, you know, extra lives. The big pinball machine of sobriety. You know, bonus round. That's where the magic happens. You've played a part in this person's... You've played a part. Now, there are a couple little pet peeve things that I hear in meetings. I have a little list. I was thinking, this is as close as I've ever come to jotting stuff down for a meeting. One of them, it's nothing I did. You know, running around, you're sober. You've worked the steps. Well, it's nothing I did. Bullshit. Excuse me. Bullshit. Spiritual program of action. Not a spiritual program of sitting on your hands. Not a spiritual program of sitting your ass in a meeting waiting for it to strike you. I used to do that, man. I used to think, well, I sit in this place, man. I'm just waiting, it's going to happen. And you know, you can see where people get that impression. That if they just stay there long enough, you know, they'll be before the miracle happens. You know, I understand that, but let's take it in context. The miracle is not going to happen unless you do something. Who's got experience with it just hitting you? I want to see who. Because we're going to pull you up here and start quizzing. I don't know. I had to pick up the phone and call people. I had to get on my knees and ask God to keep my sorry ass sober. I had to go out and, hello, you know, what can I do to make it right? I had to do all that, you know, I had to work the steps. I had to ask somebody to help me. When I get crazy today, I got to go to God. I got to take action. Because if I'm just left out there floating, man, I'm screwed. And so that's a little pet peeve, a little rant, if you will. Yeah, that's number one. And we're not going to get to all of them. Well, I already got Lone Endeavor, actually. I want to talk about that. We got anonymity, that's there. Recovered, that's there. What about the hard drinker versus the real alcoholic? Now, that's a big primary purpose thing up in North Texas. Is that a big thing? I mean, you guys, I know you guys are talking about it. Bill Wilson said that if AA ever dies, it's going to be from within by the watering down of the message. And you can ask my sponsees. My sponsor always carried a big book. He would come in, I'd see him across the meeting, he'd have a brand new book, and he'd go like this. It's all clear. And then they're all marked up in no time. And then he'd come in, new experience. New book. He carried a book from the time I've known him to this day. My response is, you know, because guess what? You might be sitting there in a meeting sometime. You can't be the cop every single meeting. Some other people need to step up. We have a bunch of people in our home group who will do that. But even then, you know, it can run them up. You know what? So you might just open the literature and read something useful while they're talking about their lawnmower or their, you know, their water heater exploded. I really needed a meeting. No, you need a plumber. You know what? They also told me way back when an AA meeting ought to be about a cheerleading session for the power of God working in your life. How about that? Admitted, we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. You know, somewhere along the way, I accepted also. Not just admit. I admitted was the first part, but then I accepted. You know? There's a beautiful little thing in the Keys to the Kingdom in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says, AA is not a program that can be finished and done with. Maybe I better read it. What do you think? Yeah. Anybody ever read the Keys to the Kingdom? I know a bunch of you have. AA is not a plan for recovery that can be finished and done with. It is a way of life. And the challenge contained in its principles is great enough to keep any human being striving for as long as he or she lives. We do not, cannot outgrow this plan. As arrested alcoholics, we must have a program that allows, a program for living which allows for limitless expansion. Keeping one foot in front of the other is essential for maintaining our arrestment. Others may idle in a retrogressive groove without too much danger, but retrogression can spell death for us. However, it isn't as rough as it sounds, as we do become grateful for the necessity that makes us toe the line, and we find that we're compensated for consistent effort by the countless dividends we receive. Dividends, man. We like dividends. Dividend, you know. Because all we have, you know, when you're out there doping and drinking, all you got is expenses. Dividends are like, you know, few and far between. The dividend is when the cop pulls you over, you know, and actually lets you go. And I had a lot of problems with that, too. I was always the one getting busted, and that was another part of the cosmic conspiracy, is why all my friends, they would get pulled over, and it was the most miraculous thing, how they always got out of it. And I think part of it had to do with my trap, because I said some things sometimes. Dividends. Another thing that's really interesting, see, when I left that treatment center the second time, my buddy said, and pardon me, but this is exactly what he said, God damn Troy, for good and for all this time. Okay? Not one day at a time. For good and for all this time. And where that comes out of the literature is in Dr. Bob's nightmare. Dr. Bob. What does Dr. Bob have to say about that? He says, I spend a great deal of time passing on what I've learned to those who want and need it badly. That's the kicker. A whole shitload of us need it. Not a whole lot of us want it. Or if we do want it, we're not willing to work for it. Look. Michelle gave me a birthday card. I got all kinds of crazy stuff in my butts, man. They're always around. Anyway, Dr. Bob and the good old timers. Pardon me for that little... I got pictures of meetings I've been to in Mexico and El Salvador. And people ask me, they're like, well, God, Troy, you're on vacation. Why do you go to a meeting when you're on vacation? Well, because the fact is, if I'm not sober, there are no vacations. That makes sense? There's like jail. I spent 120 days in work release at Del Valle. The day I checked into work release, felony probation, I went to the Northland group that day, had a few dollars in my pocket, and on the way I bought some wine. And I sat in there and I played cards all day. I didn't attend one AA meeting. And when the time came to go check into jail, May 28th, 1998, I couldn't start my truck. I hadn't figured out how to unhook that thing at that point. So I'm in the parking lot at an AA club asking sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous to blow in this thing. Because I got to go to jail. And when I got there, the program officer saw me and smelled me and tested me and said, young man, we're not sure if you're going to go to work Monday, which was the day I was going to start my brand new job. You may go straight to TDC. We may roll you over. And so I sat there that weekend and watched people come and go, laughing, cutting up. They've been out in the world, eating, doing whatever. Come and go, come and go, come and go. My future is very uncertain at that point. But I managed to get through dry, and I hung out Wednesday nights with Mark and all those guys over at Solutions down off Old Torf, and I would go there, and I stayed dry. But then when I got out, that's when that last drunk started, and it started the same old way. It'll be different this time. I made that 120 days. That's real good. I'm going out to Mom's house. I'm 38 and a half years old, live with Mom and Stepdad, which sucked. I'm going out there. I get a little half pint of tequila because I can control that. It's going to be different. And it was, for about a week. And then it was a pint a day for about a week. And then it was a liter a day for, you know, a month. And then it was 2 liters a day on work days until January 26th of 1999. And I had all my possessions. My worldly possessions were in a little storage locker out there in V Cave off 620 by Spring Hill Restaurant. And I would ride my bike over there and sit with my stuff. And this little roll-up storage thing, I'd ride the bike, and I'd just sit in there by myself and look around at, you know, what I owned. It wasn't much. You know, what could have been, man? Dr. Bob. The question which, well, that was June 10th, 1935, and that was my last dream. As I ride nearly 4 years have passed, the question which might naturally come into your mind would be, what did that man do or say that was different from what others had done or said? It must be remembered that I had read a great deal and talked to everyone who knew or thought they knew anything about the subject of alcoholism or drug addiction. But this was a man who had experienced many years of frightful drinking, who had had most of the drunkard's experiences known to man, but who had been cured by the very means I've been trying to employ. That is to say, the spiritual approach. He gave me information about the subject of alcoholism, which was undoubtedly helpful. And in italics, of far more importance was the fact that he was the first living human with whom I'd ever talked who knew what he was talking about with regard to alcoholism, from actual experience. In other words, he taught my language. He knew all the answers, and certainly not because he had picked them up in his reading or in his LCDC class. Love him, man. But you know what? I was talking with a lady recently, and she's going to this counselor. I said, is your counselor an alcoholic? And this is to get help with alcoholism. She doesn't want to go to AA. They're too crazy. Well, but this person studied alcoholism. No, they're not an alcoholic, but they've studied it. I said, well, that's cool, but you know, it's like a doctor can study how babies are born, but he didn't know a damn thing about the pain involved with having one, right? Yes, mothers. Mothers everywhere. But it's true. You know, you get back to what Mark said. What's your experience with that? Well, it'll have any. Well, then how the hell are you going to... Dr. Bob, you know, he had talked to a lot of people. He was a doctor. Okay, so he spends a great deal of time passing on what I've learned to others who want and need it badly. I do it for four reasons. One, sense of duty. Two, it is a pleasure. Because in so doing, I'm paying my debt to the man who took time to pass it on to me. And because every time I do it, I take out a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. Unlike most of our crowd, I did not get over my craving for liquor much during the first 2.5 years of abstinence. That's rough, man. I've always been very grateful that I was relieved quickly. It was almost always with me. But at no time have I been anywhere near yielding. I used to get terribly upset when I saw my friends drink and knew I could not. But I schooled myself to believe that though I once had the same privilege, I had abused it so frightfully that I was withdrawn. So it doesn't behoove me to squawk about it, for after all, nobody ever had to throw me down and pour liquor down my throat. I threw you down. Take your liquor. All right? Yeah. Run down the street. I'll guard your dope. Right? Have experience with that, young lady? If you think you're an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have some other form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what is in this book, I feel sorry for you. If you think you're strong enough to beat the game alone, that is your affair. But if you really want to quit drinking liquor, smoking crack, shooting dope, eating pills, for good and all, there it is, good and all, and sincerely feel you must have some help, we know we have an answer for you. And here's the little kicker. It never fails if you go about it with one half the zeal you've been in the habit of showing when getting another drink. Your Heavenly Father will never let you down. Yeah! That's good stuff, right? You know? Oh, that's beautiful. This is like a time warp, man. 20, really? Oh, okay. Good. We can talk about the lawnmower. It's all going blown up. Dead cat. You know, I laid down on a train track one time high on acid in Houston. That was sort of a spiritual experience because I woke up, I was getting kicked in the ribs with the brightest light I'd ever seen right there over near the old Houston Post building over there, if any of you know that part of town, sort of between Beller Boulevard. And man, and I thought I'd, you know, cheated. Well, I sort of did cheat death. But that's just one of those things, man. There were so many of those type of things. Where's everybody going? They found out it was 20 minutes. They were like, gotta get out.
Might have been a treatment center.
Could be. Man, you sure know how to hurt a guy's feelings, man. Maybe I'll... That's all right. If there's just one left, it'd be okay. I'd just sit and talk with them, man. You know, something else that's really important, guys, when you're sponsoring people, and when I talk, I generally don't talk massively about the mechanics of the steps, because they're in the book. You and your sponsor are going to get it with it. The foundation meeting, there are people who will teach you that stuff. My feel is more cheerleader to the power of God working in your life. And letting you know, man, that it can get so good. And you don't have to get locked up anymore. You don't have to get loaded anymore. When I was about 3 years sober, I remarried that ex-wife. We were divorced for 7 years. And we got remarried. That was not part of my plan, so please don't come and ask me how I did it, because that's not it, man. If you're trying to get sober for anybody else but your own sorry ass, you won't do it. You won't do it. And really, I say sorry ass because I'm kidding, because we're a bunch of drunks and addicts and alcoholics. But really, what I really feel, and I was thinking about this on the way over here tonight, is there's nobody in this room that doesn't deserve to be sober. Nobody. I don't give a shit what you've done. God can take you and turn you to good account. If you're willing to do the work, if you're willing to trust what we do, God can turn you to good account. I don't care what kind of piece of shit you think you feel like, because I felt like one. No one is sunk too low or become too discredited to be welcomed cordially if he or she means business. God, dog, man. Who's struggling in here right now? Who's struggling in here right now? Be honest. Come on. Right on. Right on. Thank you. Thank you. You know what? It's not always easy to admit. And you know what? If somebody's going to judge you over that shit, you tell them to come talk to me or Charlie or Trevor or Marty or a whole bunch of people, because we'll set them straight quick. There's no room for that. I got guys, I've had the same phone number since I first got sober, a little before. And back, you know, I was so pissed off at AT&T way back when. But I'm still with AT&T. You know why? I didn't want to change my number. I had all these guys, I had taken, carried the message to this, but you know that thing where at Northland they were saying, if you have a year, I started carrying a message to a treatment center every single Tuesday night for like 18 months, on my own. Nobody told me to go do that. I went and found it and did it because those guys back at the treatment center and Mark and Chris said, go do it. My sponsor went and found his own stuff. He still does. Do I mean business? Because if your sponsor's got to tell you to go do a bunch of this stuff, where you got no skin in the game. You got no skin in the game. You know, how serious are you? You know what I do when guys ask me to sponsor them? I give them my number and I say, you call me, or I'll tell them, show up at this place. That's your first, I don't tell them, but that's your first test. Are you serious? If you can't even pick up the phone, I'm not going to chase your ass around. It's not me. There are a lot of people. There are so many people dying. You know, Norma talked about it earlier. All over the place. They need help. That brings me to something that I didn't write down, which is pretty fun. The book talks about the drowning man, right? Huh? Oh, well, I was wide. I don't know. I thought we were hitting a famous person coming in. Activity. The book talks about the drowning man. I've been surfing since I was a little kid, and I've been held underwater in some big waves, some nasty rock, and weird places, and scary situations. When you're drowning, you want out of the water, quick. Humans need air, right? There's no air under there. You need air. You want out. The book talks about, you know, we move, desperation of drowning men, drowning women. So I sort of had this little picture of, you know, all these drowning people, and they're getting pulled out. You know, it talks later about where the survivors of a great liner. You know, the sinking liner, we've escaped disaster together. Our common peril, common solution, you know, the common elements that the big book talks about. Common peril, alcoholism, drug addiction. Common solution, 12 steps. So we're pulling them out, right? Bill and Bob got together. They pull alcoholic number 3 out. Okay, now what? Let's go find some. There's more. They're drowning. They're dying. We're pulling them out. It seems to me that a lot of times people get up on the deck, they're not drowning anymore, and off they go. Because they're safe. And they're not interested in helping. They're not interested in jumping back, going back into service, or as a couple of those guys say, Charlie's sponsor said, joining us in the trenches. I know a bunch of you guys have heard, we need help in the trenches. You know, they talked in the 30s, near, you know, all around, alcoholics are dying. So how willing are you today to get out and go help someone? Take time out of my precious schedule. When life gets so good and so busy, sometimes we forget why it got so good and so busy. Sometimes. And sometimes we go get loaded again. That's the sad fact, right? Who's got some little bit? I got a little experience with that. Although I never let it get too good. You know, once it got good, man, I said, I'm going to hang on to this shit. I don't want to drink again. I don't want to go to jail again. I don't want to go away for a long time. I don't want to be suicidal again. You know, I heard Mark used to talk about these guys who were, they'd come to him and he said, well, they're chronic relapsers. They've got low self-esteem. And he would laugh at them. He would laugh at them. And they would, well, that's not funny, you know, why are you laughing at me? He said, well, because if you didn't have low self-esteem after robbing and cheating and lying and stealing from everybody you knew, you'd be a sociopath and we couldn't help you. But as it is, you're just a garden variety alcoholic and we got something for that. You're just a garden variety crackhead. We got something for that. Bill Papa, we got something for that. Huh? True. Right? We got something for that. Question is, do you want it? You willing to do what we do? Huh? I don't know. I wasn't for a long time. I'm so glad I finally got willing. So glad. You know, and the back to the mechanics of the steps. And the fifth step, a really important spot. So there's about half a page in there talking about the fifth step and into action where it talks about a close-mouthed friend. Someone who can keep a confidence. You know, when we decide who's going to hear our story, and I don't think that can be stressed enough. Because I think there's, you know, we're certain fearful little buggers, right? We're out there using, and we don't want to tell anybody all that stuff. And especially not when we think they might go blab it to the whole world, you know, put it on CNN or the American Statesman. Oh my God, you won't believe what I heard. I think we're messing with people's lives when people go out and blab what they've heard in a fifth step, in inventory. And you know they do. They talk about it twice in a half a page. And I think that's a really important thing. And you might spend some time with your sponsees as you go through that and point that out to them. That, you know, you're screwing people's lives. It's a big point where a lot of people fall. You know, they follow various spots through the steps, but the action steps, the real action steps, which also to me happen to be like the real juju steps, the real gravy steps, man. Doing a fifth step, be alone in perfect peace and ease, our fear small promise, we begin to feel the nearness of our Creator, and often the strong feeling that the drink problem is vanished. Man, you know, after, well, let's see, I had an obsession to drink from the time I woke up till the time I passed out for about 25 years. No, about 20-something years, 20-something. And I was drinking in the morning in college. Because I just wasn't quite right in the morning. After a hard night of partying, to go to class, I needed to go hit the little Coke machine that had Heineken's and St. Pauli girls in it. Just for, you know, practice. You know, I'm young, if you can do it. But, we should read something up. Oh, here's something. RTFB. Anybody know what that means? RTFB. I have a little mag. What? There's another adjective in there for emphasis. Yeah. Yeah. It's where your instructions are. My sponsor calls it owner's manual. His sponsor up in D.C. talked about keep sawing. I know that's not proper, but it's funny. Keep sawing, you know? It's that whole, do you mean business today? Are you chasing? Are you seeking recovery from the desperation of a drowning man? Just because you're not drowning today, doesn't mean you couldn't fall your ass right back off the boat. Right? See it all the time. Oh, let me open this new guy. Well, guess what? You're not ready to be helping a soul because you're so shaky. When your little buddy gets the idea to go get some crap, you're like, yeah, let's go. I've been waiting for someone to ask me. I've been hanging out with all those guys at CA. Nobody's asked me, but let's hit it. Happens. Drunks do. You know, I've seen a bunch of that stuff, and it's really crazy. Five? Perfect. Well, that's it. No, come on. Let's see what Dr. Bob said. Let's just clarify this anonymity thing for just a moment, real quick, and then we're going to something else. I'm going to read a little something out of a story that's very seldom read, and it sort of sums up life as a recovered alcoholic or addict. Warren called Dr. Bob, said there were two ways to break the anonymity tradition. Like, and this is important because this goes to service and this goes to being able for somebody to catch you when they need to find that guy. Not the guy talking about the lawnmower, the guy talking about the solution. If the names are both Charlie, you know, and they, oh. The day I shared this at my home group, there were five guys in there named Charles. Five. And believe me, some of them, the only thing I want that they've got is 20 years. Not being mean, it's just the truth. The only thing you got that I want is the time. All the time is I've been doing this consistently for a while. Charlie's been doing it. Angela's been doing it. Michelle's been doing it. I watched Michelle come in, man, that girl jumped all over service work. Got busy, right? It's just the number's not the important thing. It's the commitment. I celebrated 11 years recently. Well, at 10 years at my home group, man, I got all these sponsees and my sponsor and all these people there, and they're wearing t-shirts from my little surfboard company. I broke down and cried like a little baby. I was like, I was on dope. I'm looking around and I see a guy coming in with a shirt that I didn't make, right? It's got my logo on it though. I'm like, hey, where'd you get that? And all of a sudden these people all just start going like this. You mean like this one? Like this one? Like this one? There are like 40 of them in the room. And I'm chairing the meeting. And I put my head down on that desk and cried. Because I didn't have any friends, guys. I didn't know anybody when I came to Austin, Texas. I showed up, I started going to Northland, and I got a shitload of friends today. And I got people I care about and that care about me. I got people I can count on, and they can count on me. Steve and Stacy showed me how to live sober. They would invite me to parties all the time, invite me to their home. And I wasn't exactly sure I was worthy. But you know what? They invited me over there. They didn't. You know, and I sat there, and I wasn't always comfortable because I was by myself. But you know what? They showed me how to live sober. And they made me welcome. And for a bunch of us, man, that is vital. It's vital. And to have all these friends. I made a commitment to that meeting where Mark Houston, where I met him, that I used to go drunk, that solutions meeting. I still go there every Wednesday night. 11, 12 years later. And I got to tell my story on my birthday this year over there, or the week before. 11 years, and I was able to look around that room with like 75, 80, 90 people in there, and every single person that was in there, I watched them come in. Where else am I going to get that opportunity? Just because I made a commitment, because there were people there when I showed up, wet, drunk, crazy, who showed me what to do, who pulled me out, got me on deck. And I made a commitment way back then that as long as I was in Austin, Texas, that's where I'm going to be on Wednesday night. And I'm still there. And that's not tooting or anything. That's just, I made a commitment. Because there. And I had a guy, when we were both a year sober, I said, Bud, why'd you quit going to that meeting? He goes, well, I just really wouldn't get anything out of it anymore. I'm like, really? Even in a year, I was just like, really? Nice. Selfish prick. Guys coming out every single week. Great place to find newcomers. Great place. So I didn't get it. He heard the same thing I heard. And all those guys that started Club 101, they heard the same things. And they all went and kicked ass. And I used to think, well, they got the really solid meeting over there. So I sort of need to be over there with them. But you know what? Then it came to me in meditation, that's crazy. We all had the same solid message. Why should we all be concentrated in the same place? No, we go out. We're satellites. We take it around. We go. You know, if it's all solid in one place, get your ass out there and go somewhere where it's not. Take them on. My buddy Chris used to say, those crazy old crusty fuckers in Northland. But they're, at times it is. But then there are a bunch of people who will stand up for the big book and for the program, not their program, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. So I just thought it was good to be, you know, I want to be a little ambassador of God's power. No, God's power saved my ass. And I didn't know how I got picked to come up here and talk tonight. Man, I was scared to death. I've spoken here and there, never, you know. And there are a bunch of solid people in here. I see them around, and congratulations, 7 years, badass. I mean, I see this guy around, the black shirt. I've seen him all over the place. They're solid people here, and my buddies, solid folks. But man, you got to bring some enthusiasm to this deal. We need enthusiasm. We need fun in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, like, it didn't work. No, you get to save your life. That's what the... It didn't work. What was Chris talking about? Yeah, he was screwing chickens. Otherwise, I can't tell anybody, you know. So you're going to die for it. I had a guy tell me recently... Well, it's what I do. I know all the bartenders on the 6th Street. I know all of our managers. It's what I do. I said, well, I hope it's worth dying for. That's what you do. I haven't heard from him in a while. You know, but my number's the same. Maybe he'll call. Or maybe he'll call one of you. You know, I got a call from a little guy the other day. And he wasn't ready to work with me when I was trying to work with him. But he called me yesterday when he found out I was speaking here. And he said, I just want to make sure that was the same. It was you. I said, yeah. And he said he finally got in enough pain. He worked the steps with the guy. and it's good today. And you know what? I don't give a shit who you work with. Just work. Work the steps. It's not about who your sponsor is. It's about you finding a guide to get the power of God working in your life. And then get out and do some cool shit. Go surfing. I'm building wooden surfboards today, wooden stand-up paddle boards, hollow wooden boards, epoxy glass. I'm building ukuleles, badass, look matched. I know it sounds crazy. They're just like little guitars. I'm building them from scratch. Come on now. Don't make fun. Don't belittle the little instrument. There's some guys that can rock on those things. You know what? It's fun. It's zen. It's zen. Deal is, Chris and those guys and my bud Steve says, keep sawing. I watch him, man. He paints. He does stuff. I know all these people who, like, some of the most talented, intelligent people in the world are sitting in the rooms of Cocaine Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, Pill Papa Anonymous. We are. We're some of the most talented, creative people in the world. And if you get the power of God working in your life, man, sky's the limit. Those guys told me way back when, there's nothing too good for a recovered alcoholic. Nothing. Nothing too good. I mean, Mark used to say, and God bless our friend, man. God bless our friend who passed away recently. God bless him because he helped a lot of people. And you know what? You know what he'd want more than anything for us today? He used to laugh every time he saw me because one day I was there and I would tell him I'd show up drunk at his little meeting and I fell off this rail. He's standing there talking to me with Tony M. And I'm listening. And you know, they're like, you're drunk. And I'm like, no, I'm hypoglycemic. I'm tottering on the rail because, you know, it's mercury again, right? They're looking at me going, come on, man, you're not fooling a fucking soul. But all of a sudden, I just topped off backwards and bashed my head on the concrete. And they're just, you know, Mark's looking down, you know, 6'8 or whatever. And he just would chuckle every time he saw me. But you know what? He would be so proud that a little guy who listened to him gets to go carry the message, gets to go get in the trenches. I mean, there are a whole bunch of men here and the guys that I work with. And come on and get you some. Huh? Power of God, thanks.